Welcome to the Education and Empowerment Podcast. In this show, our hosts explore success and advancement through education by interviewing today's top leaders in the fields of education, business, and technology in order to provide insight into what it really takes to succeed. This show is brought to you by Forestay, a SaaS-enabled online booking marketplace for student and intern housing. Forestay provides turnkey, all-in-one, cloud-based accommodation software solutions for colleges, universities, and organizations. Learn more at offcampus.forestay.com and landlords.forestay.com. All right, let's get into the show.
In today's episode, I will be speaking with Dr. Shakir Abdullah, who is the Vice President of Student Affairs at Clayton State University. In this role, he serves as the Chief Student Affairs Officer and Advisor to President on all matters pertaining to student life, including but not limited to campus life, career services, counseling and psychological services, Disability Resource Center, housing and residence life, recreation, wellness, and more. Dr. Abdullah works to build strong partnerships across campus and in local community, identifying and implementing innovative approaches to addressing student needs, including learning outcomes. An emerging scholar practitioner, Dr. Abdullah has published in the area of multicultural competence and remains an active national presenter, consultant, and trainer. He has written the 2012 book entitled Baptism by Fire, an investigation of the experiences and multicultural competence of the diversity staff in higher education, Lombard Academic Publishing. Dr. Abdullah holds Master's in Higher Education and Student Affairs from Ohio State University and Doctorate in Administration of Higher Education from Auburn University. His education includes extensive international study, including travel to Lumbadzi, Malawi, and participation in programs at the University of Cairo, Egypt, and Lancaster University in England. In this podcast episode, Dr. Shakir Abdullah will be sharing his insights on leveraging multicultural competencies to support student success outside of classroom. Without further ado, let's dive in into this episode. Dr. Abdullah, I'm honored to be speaking with you today.
Bakhtiar, thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate the opportunity to share with your audience and really just kind of talk about some of the work that I do.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So for beginning, I'd like to get to know you better, and I'd like our audience to get to know you better. Would you mind speaking about how'd you get into the field of student affairs?
Absolutely. And so I came to student affairs accidentally. I'm a first generation college graduate. My parents went to school, but they didn't graduate from college. My mother ended up getting her associate's degree right before I got my master's degree. But for me, my journey to higher education began with a work study job. I was fortunate when I graduated from high school. I had a scholarship and an internship with what was then known as National City Bank in Northeast Ohio. And it was a great opportunity for me. They gave me a scholarship, a job. So every summer for 4 years, I got to work in banking, and it was a scholarship attached to it, which helped me pay for college. But the challenge with it was that I found out that I didn't enjoy banking, and that wasn't going to be the career path for me. But fortunately, once I got to campus, I went to a small liberal arts school in Ohio, Wittenberg University, and I had two work study opportunities. One was in the cafeteria, one was in the admissions office. I had just finished working a job at a retirement home, and I worked in the kitchen. And I said, well, I've got that experience. I don't really love that. So let's try this work in the admissions office. And the rest is, as they say, history. I was fortunate enough to have 4 years working in the admissions office. My senior year, I ended up being an intern and working almost full time recruiting students. My focus was on recruiting students of color and helping them get connected to the university. And I just loved it. I just figured, it was then that I found out that there was actually a career path to be able to work in higher education and, have a job. I didn't realize that. I didn't know what I didn't know about higher education. I thought, I'm going to go to school for 4 years. I'm going to major in business management and I'm going to get a job. I didn't know the details. I didn't know the process. And so those 4 years in the admissions office opened my eyes to the business of higher education and the opportunities to work on the administrative side of higher education. And I really had a great experience as an undergraduate student. I did almost everything you can imagine. I played football in college. I joined a fraternity. I was involved in student unions and student organizations. You know, it was really, I had a really rich experience and I loved it. I was like, this is the best 4 years of my life. Of course, I would love to be able to do this for the long term and continue to be able to serve and spend so many years on college campuses. So in a sense, I never left college.
That's amazing to hear. I mean, it's quite a roller coaster that, you know, you had to go through there. So now, you know, once you're in the field, you know, what does student success mean to you now?
And student success, it means so many different things to many different people. And I think that was one of the things that I've learned over the years in higher education. Oftentimes, folks are just looking at the academic success and say, hey, this is it. This is all you need. And the reality is you need much more than that. You know, being there, being in college is not enough. Getting a degree is not enough. You have got to have a rich cachet of experiences that translate to personal and professional success. So were you involved as a student? If you were involved, you develop relationships, if you develop leadership skills, if you learned how to navigate difficult scenarios and difficult situations, if you learned how to manage people, if you learned how to lead people, if you learned how to follow, if you learned how to do all of these things and you learn how to thrive, then to me, these are all parts of student success. If you were retained through graduation, if you were able to graduate, if you were able to get the experiences that you needed and that you wanted, if you were able to develop your identity, if you were able to hone your skills and the way that you communicate, all of these things are related to student success. I think one of the challenges is that if you just walk out of an institution with an academic degree and that's it, then you failed to really maximize your collegiate experience. One of the things that you get, and I talk to students all the time, prospective students, and I say, hey, college is going to be the time where you develop lifelong friendships. You're going to get to know people who are going to be at your weddings, your funerals, and the births of your children, right? Because this is the time where you actually get to focus on those relationships. You get to focus on developing those relationships. And there is not going to be a time post-college when you really get to do that. And this is critical. I know because some of the relationships that I developed in undergraduate, in graduate school, those relationships still carry me today. I have job opportunities because of those relationships. I have access to different learning opportunities, wealth development, personal development, professional development. A lot of those come from recommendations and suggestions from folks that I got to know in my collegiate years. And I think that's a really significant part of the college experience, college success, student success, building those relationships. Also developing confidence in your ability to thrive and your ability to manage a range of situations that happens in college. That is a part of student success. If you are able to overcome challenges, if you are able to learn from your mistakes and those mistakes don't cost you everything, you get a chance to experience student success. And I think those are some of the things that are critical to point out. Those are some of the critical lessons to pay attention to. I remember my first semester in undergrad, I did absolutely terrible academically. It was the first time in my life I had done poorly academically. And I look back at that semester and I look back at me working on my dissertation and completing my PhD. And if someone had just taken a snapshot of me that first semester, they would have said, this is a student who's not going to be successful. But I've been able to overcome those mistakes. I was able to overcome those mistakes, learn from those setbacks, and be successful. So when we talk about student success, I am talking about it from a holistic perspective. It is not just the academics. It is absolutely all the things that are associated with the collegiate experience, the learning from the mistakes, the developing friendships, the managing yourself. Self-regulation is a really critical tool that you learn and that contributes to student success. So these are all things that I think about when I think about student success. And I highlighted my experiences with internships. While I interned in banking for 4 years, it was a success, even though I figured out, hey, I don't like banking. Imagine had I committed professional years to that, then I would have been maybe a disgruntled employee or something like that. So that was a strong lesson learned. That was a part of successful experiences. And then at the same time, my other internship in admissions helped me to figure out a professional pathway that I am still following today. So to me, student success is so many different things. And I think that's important to point out, because oftentimes people look at just the quantitative data. All right, you have a high GPA. And the quantitative data is great for some measurements, but it is not a complete picture of student success. The qualitative data about experiences and lessons learned, those things that are meaningful, that meaning making in your life, those are all part of the student success factor from my perspective. And I think that's important for folks to understand.
That's certainly very empowering. I'd like to know a little bit more about student success outside of classroom. Would you name, you know, a few critical components that you believe are so important now to help set young people for success?
Absolutely. So one of the things that I think when we think about out of class, the number one factor to student success is self-regulation. If you have the ability to manage yourself, if you have the ability to harness the discipline that it takes to wake up on time, to go to bed on time, to study when it's time, to turn down those opportunities to go and party, to cut off your video game console at a decent hour, and really to control your emotions. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I think when I talk about self-regulation, the ability to not let your emotions control your reactions in situations, good or bad, because the reality is nothing is ever as good as it seems, and it's rarely ever as bad as it seems. So I think that kind of self-regulation is a critical piece to student success. You learn how to not take every piece of criticism to heart. And I think that's really important when you're developing leadership skills in terms of organizations. If you lead an organization, you are going to become a target. If you are running student government, you're going to become a target. They're going to be critics. You cannot please everyone. So I think these are some important skills to learn. The ability to engage and develop relationships with your faculty, your staff, and other alumni mentors is a critical piece to student success, because oftentimes your faculty members are going to be the ones who write letters of recommendation. Staff members at an institution are also going to write letters of recommendation for you. So being able to develop those relationships is crucial. And it also speaks to your ability to, you know, ingratiate yourself with folks and to become part of a team, or to engage with folks who are at, you know, maybe different levels of experience than you are. If you can develop those relationships, that makes a big difference. And that is a part of the student success measure. And so those are some of the outside of the classroom things that I would point to that are measures of student success. And really, one of the most important things is the ability to apply critical thinking to external experiences. So oftentimes you get scenarios in the classroom that force you to apply critical thinking. If you can apply critical thinking to things outside of the classroom, experiences, engagements, things of that nature, I think it can make a significant difference. And I think one of the things that's also important to pay attention to, we are a very, very diverse society. We're becoming more and more diverse every day. If you have the knowledge, skills, and awareness to navigate diverse communities, diverse experiences, then it really makes a difference in terms of your success. You feel comfortable working with folks who don't look like you, who maybe haven't experienced life like you. If you have that ability to learn about cultures that are different and similar to yours, if you have that, you know, the skills to have conversations and to engage with people who are similar and different from you, and if you just have the awareness of when to apply those things, that really helps you stand out. Because I think sometimes folks are placed into scenarios where it's the first time they've been in this space and they just can't manage. And if you can figure out how to balance those skills, if you can understand, you know, how to become multiculturally competent, it makes you an asset to your organization. And it also helps you be an ambassador to your organization and to communities that folks want to engage in. So I think those are some of the out of classroom success signals and opportunities that will show up for students. But you have to be open to it, and you've got to be aware. You've got to have some awareness of when you're learning and when you're experiencing these things, and take them for the lessons that they are, as opposed to being frustrated by the lack of ease that may become apparent in a new scenario.
This is certainly very insightful. Dr. Abdullah, I'm interested in learning more about the work that you do at Clayton State, and perhaps can you bring us a few examples that you're proud of as it relates to student success programming and the framework of the, you know, multicultural competencies, and maybe you can shed some light on to what they are and, you know, what we should know about them?
Absolutely. And so I've been fortunate. I've been the vice president of student affairs here at Clayton State University in Morrow, Georgia, just south of Atlanta, for the past 3 years. And I think we've seen a number of successes in terms of getting students engaged outside of the classroom. We are a predominantly Black institution. We are non-traditional in terms of our student enrollment. We have got a lot of students who are outside of the traditional age. So probably about one third of our students are the traditional age students. One third are older students, adult learners. And then we've got about one third of our students are senior learners. So we really have a unique campus space here. And I think one of the things that we have been able to do to contribute to student success is acknowledging the differences that do exist amongst our students. And so we have been forced by the pandemic to finally be as engaging as possible. So what we've done is we've pivoted to a number of different virtual programs, and the virtual programs allow all of our students, our traditional students, our adult learners, and our senior learners to actually participate in programs and events. And they're allowed to engage. They can engage on their own time, whether it's real time or watching a recording. So I think that has been one of the things that I've been most proud of, because I don't think anyone was ready for the changes and the challenges that this pandemic brought to us. But our staff pivoted so quickly and created resources and created programming that allowed us to keep going, allowed folks to be engaged and to stay engaged. And I think that was very critical. And so I'm certainly proud of that work. Another piece that we've been able to do is partner with our academic affairs, because I think oftentimes institutions have departments that exist within silos. So the Division of Student Affairs, you know, we're typically focused with all of the things that are happening outside of the classroom. We're focused with, you know, the student life piece. Academic affairs is often focused on what's happening in the classroom, and, you know, never should the two meet. But we made sure that there was that collaboration. We made sure that we worked closely with academic affairs to provide additional support for students. And so our resident assistants in housing now help with academic support for some of our students. They check in on our students. They reach out to them to make sure that they are doing well. In addition, we've got an AmeriCorps company or AmeriCorps volunteers who are working as mentors to help support our first year students as they transition. And so they are talking to those students on a regular basis, but then they're also checking in and making sure that they're doing what they need to do as it relates to their academic success. So I think those kind of collaborations have been really critical to our student success. And then also we work closely with our facilities department. Our facilities are making sure that our students are staying safe during this time. And they're also making sure that our campus appearance is great. And I think sometimes, you know, we overlook those partnerships with facilities, and it's just another tool, another group of people on campus who can help our students transition well and feel comfortable. So I'm proud of the collaboration, I think, that we've been able to do across campus. We certainly have been fond of reaching out to different departments and different units on campus to help let them know that we're open. We're open to supporting and engaging, and that's critical. And I think another piece you talked about was, you asked me about, you know, when we talk about multicultural competence, what does that mean and why is that important for what we do at Clayton State University? Well, I mentioned earlier, we are a predominantly Black institution, a PBI. That is a designation that indicates that the majority of your students are Black. We are not a historically Black university because, you know, we weren't founded for the sole purpose of educating Black students. We were originally a junior college, predominantly white. And as the demographics have shifted, our demographics as an institution have shifted as well. And so the reality is that we have to recognize both our history and our present. And in order to do that, we need to make sure that our faculty, staff, and students have the knowledge, skills, and awareness to be able to work with communities that are similar and different from them. This is the crux of multicultural competence. It is the ability to leverage the knowledge you have of your own culture and other cultures, and also to leverage the skills it takes to communicate internally and externally when we're talking about culture. And then the awareness, that awareness piece is critical because you have to know when to apply the knowledge or enact the skills that you have, because, you know, it's important to pay attention to, because knowledge or skills without awareness of when to apply or when to share are useless. So you have to have all three, the knowledge, skills, and the awareness in place in order to recognize and to communicate and to thrive in spaces that aren't always similar to what you're used to. And I think we are working to instill that in our students, but also in our staff and our faculty through regular training, through community conversations, through speaker series and things like that. I'm the co-chair of our university committee on inclusion and engagement. And this was created in an effort to make sure we are addressing these things across campus. I was a part of the team that wrote our diversity strategic plan, where we highlighted, you know, what we wanted to do as an institution and how we wanted to engage as an institution on topics of diversity. And the reality is, you know, no one gets this right 100% of the time. We're not going to always get it right, but we are committed to getting it right and committed to, you know, acknowledging our mistakes, acknowledging our shortcomings when we fall short, and opening up the door for conversation. You know, one of the programs that we've recently completed, we're really proud to see this happen, was our beloved community conversations, where we have open roundtables for faculty, staff, students, and community to really just talk about who are we and how do we build this beloved community. This beloved community is the notion that was led by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in terms of getting to this space where we certainly understand who we are as a community, flaws and all, and we love each other in spite of that. And so we've had those conversations on campus and we learned a lot. There's still much work to be done, you know, but the first step is acknowledging that work is to be done and that we have steps to go. But when we get it wrong, we're going to work to get it right. And when we get it right, we want to celebrate that. So I think that is how we continue to do this work. This is how we have made a difference, I think, at Clayton State, and how we have gotten folks involved in these efforts to be successful academically, socially, and we want folks to be able to thrive in this diverse world.
I really liked what you said about, and again, you know, you really empowered me myself. It's you know, I want to go study at Clayton State now.
Come on, we got graduate programs.
do you have something for educational entrepreneurship or, you know, leadership?
So what we can do is we can tailor something for you, because we have our College of Business does a lot with entrepreneurship. And then we have a number of different education majors, education leadership and teaching. So we can figure out something for you across disciplines.
That's great. That's great. Thank you so much. I really feel empowered. And I think one of the things that really, you know, stand out for me is, you know, the fact that, you know, when there is work to be done, the first step is to acknowledge that there is work to be done and acting upon it. And I wanted to expand on this a little bit because, you know, obviously with the pandemic, but, you know, it really impacted, you know, every industry, you know, across the world, you know, and at this time, as I'm speaking to many leaders and experts like yourself, you know, what I'm realizing is there's much work to be done. And I was hoping that maybe you can, you know, help us understand, you know, what challenges do you see right now that, you know, we need to start working upon, you know, and being proactive to get this to the next level, to actually, you know, help resolve those now instead of waiting for fall to, you know, come in. Like, what can we do now? Like, what are those challenges and what can we do now?
Well, I think the first challenge is acknowledging the disparities that do exist. If we can identify the disparities that exist and try to mitigate those disparities, the next piece is investigating why those disparities exist. If we know why, then we can be proactive in terms of working to prevent them from coming up and emerging in the future. So those are two critical steps to get started. And then I think the final piece is really just having some real interrogation of our history, particularly here in the United States. I think we have not addressed our history. And because we haven't addressed our history, it has put us at a disadvantage because we are not able to connect causalities in terms of processes, policies, and things like that, that ultimately have outcomes. And the outcomes are disparate. And oftentimes you'll see those outcomes based upon race, based upon gender, national origin, ability, disability, identity, orientation. All of these things are, I would call them stress points. Mm-hmm. They're all stress points that lead to differing outcomes for folks. And so I think if we can be strategic and say, hey, this disparity exists. How do we address these disparities, right? All right. And if we can start to have that conversation, then we start to address the disparities. Is the issue access? Okay. If the issue is access, let's provide access, whether it's unequal access to the internet, unequal access to technology that helps you to navigate this pandemic, let's equalize that piece. All right. It could be unequal access to wealth and wealth building tools. Why are those disparities there? Is it because of historic redlining? Is it because of historic? And when I say redlining was a practice of banks of not lending to people who lived in particular areas. And those areas were often designated based on the race of the people who lived in a particular area. So if you lived in a predominantly Black neighborhood, for instance, then banks would not lend money to buy houses and housing, owning a house has historically been a pathway to wealth. Often, you know, folks have owned houses, they've leveraged houses to pay for their kids' college education. They leverage houses to pay for their businesses. They leverage houses to buy vacation homes and other houses. So those, you know, owning a house has historically been a wealth building tool. And so let's look at what has been a barrier towards folks owning houses. You know, what has been a barrier towards education? Schools have not always been funded equally. They're still not funded equally in the United States. So that's a bit of a challenge, right? And so if we can get some equality in our schools in terms of how people are being educated, then you have greater access to higher education. And higher education has long been an equalizer in terms of economic equalizer. So it is important to start to do some of these analyses, and it's better to do them with a sober and clear mind as opposed to coming into it with preconceived notions of who people are and why people are in the conditions that they are in. So I think that acknowledgement of the disparities, action steps to remedy those disparities, and then a historical analysis of why we have those disparities so we can avoid falling into these traps in the future. So I think those are some important steps to make it through that. conversation.
I find it really interesting. And it actually reminds me the work that we do at Forestay. You know, Forestay, as you know, is an online marketplace for student intern housing. And the problem we're trying to solve, you know, for students is, and as you know, 79% of students stay off campus. They usually face, you know, strict list restrictions. And, you know, when we were looking at, you know, what are we doing and how can we solve these issues for them, we learned a lot. And there was kind of the beginning step to say, okay, you know, is it just, and the founding team, as you know, the founders, when they came to, you know, United States in pursuit of their higher education, they actually faced a lot of these issues themselves. And then they began the same way you did. They said, you know, why is this happening, right? Like, what is it only me? And as they proceeded, as they advanced, they discovered that the problem was, you know, across United States is the, you know, the hardship of finding housing and the security deposit and all of those issues. And, you know, the conversation with you definitely reminds me that the transformational work that we are doing, you know, helping students to succeed outside of classroom is very empowering. And I'm frankly very honored to be speaking with you and learning from you. And I hope that our audience will too. And on that note, I was hoping that you can tell us a little bit more about, you know, what's the future's like and, you know, what do you see being the biggest opportunity, you know, right now for student success transformation in higher education? You know, is it technology? Is it, you know, what innovative work that can be done? What opportunities do you see?
Absolutely. So higher ed is changing. It has changed over the past 20 plus years that I've worked in the field. It is really changing. I think one of the things that most of us in higher ed are aware of is that there is a coming cliff in terms of enrollment, meaning the number of students who are even available to enroll in college is going to drop dramatically as birth rates are decreasing. This is important to pay attention to because the way that we've always done things will not work moving forward. I think the pandemic has been, in a sense, a bit of foreshadowing because it's given us an idea of what happens when our enrollment goes down because students have made different decisions about how they want to pursue their future. We have to become leaner in higher ed. We need to become more efficient in higher ed, and we need to become more affordable and more practical in higher ed. I think, you know, one of the things that I always talk about with students, particularly during orientation, is that you're only going to spend, students only spend about 15% of their time in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And so you've got 85% of your time to manage how you will. Some students go to work, some students socialize, some students are researching, some students are building their own businesses. All of these things are factors that higher ed must consider when we think about what we're doing. It doesn't make sense for us to expand on our residential housing in some ways. And so Forestay has a path forward there, but there's still going to be that percentage of students who needs the traditional college space and college residence halls and things like that. So about 13% of our students live on campus in our residence halls, and then the rest of them live wherever they live. And so you've got to have that support structure in place. You've got to have those options in place. But I think the future is a bit of a hybrid. I think it's a space for students to live, work, and play, and to do all those things in the same space. Students have learned in this last year that you can actually live on campus and take classes in your residence hall and online, right? And that works. That works for some students. And that should be an option, I think, for students who want to do that. Other students certainly want to be in person and take advantage of the hybrid classes because they learn better that way. But then they go and work a full-time job after class. That works too. We just have to recognize that college is not like it was. It is not the typical 18 to 22 and then go to work. College starts and stops for people. You know, folks can return after full careers and retirement. Folks will serve in the military and then come to college with different expectations. And so we have to be ready for this shift from what we always thought college was. So all these rolling hills and many campus buildings, you know, it's time for a bit of downsizing. And I think if we can be thoughtful about that and think about multi-purpose uses of our facilities and multiple ways to engage our students and recognizing all the things that they're involved in, that can make a difference. I mean, I think our opportunities are shifting. We need to be thoughtful about childcare on campus because we have older students coming to our campuses. And so if we are proactive, if we are nimble, then we'll succeed. But if we are rigid and we stick to what always has been done, our whole sector could fail in the next 50 years. So I'm optimistic because I think we're going to be nimble. Colleges have, you know, great minds here working here, folks who are researching, folks who are on the cutting edge of so many things. And if we just listen to our experts, then we can be ready for the future, and our students will be able to succeed and really be able to contribute to society because they're ready for a shifting society with shifting expectations, shifting access, and shifting processes.
And you know, I honestly can say that you are one of those experts. I look forward to staying in touch with you. And, you know, and if there's any piece of advice or, you know, a quote that you'd like to leave us with, that would be awesome.
I appreciate that. I appreciate your kind words, Bakhtiar. One of the quotes that I live by is James Baldwin's quote that not everything faced can be overcome, but nothing can be overcome until it's faced. And I think this is where we are in higher ed. We are facing the shift in demographics. We're facing a shift in process, a shift in resources. And so we have to make sure we're facing these and not putting our heads in the sand and ignoring them. And I think if we, you know, if we do this, you know, we're not always going to get it right, but we're at least going to try to get it right. And I think that's what that quote by James Baldwin always reminds me of.
That's great. For folks who would like to stay in touch with you, what's the best way to find you?
So I'm on social media. You can find me at Clayton VPS on Instagram and Twitter, but I'm also a diversity and inclusion consultant, and folks can go to my website. My company is Practical Diversity Associates. So it's www.pracdiv.com, practdiv.com. And you can be in touch with me there. But yeah, I'm available. I like to be active. I consider myself always a student. So any useful pieces of knowledge that folks share, I'm always trying to eat it up so that I can be nimble and I can be proactive and on the cutting edge as an individual and help, you know, lead my institutions in that direction.
That's great. Well, thank you so much. On behalf of, you know, Four State Team and the Education Empowerment Podcast, I want to express our appreciation for your time. This is certainly a great conversation, Dr. Shakir Abdullah. Thanks for sharing your insights and inspiration. I mean, they truly, you know, motivational and empowering. And I hope that our listeners will find them that way. For all the people that are listening, make sure you subscribe to our podcast on podcast.forstate.com so you never miss an episode. And once again, thanks for Four State Team for sponsoring this podcast. And if you're curious about what Four State does and the work that we do with colleges, universities, check us out at podcast.forstate.com. Until our next show, thank you so much.
Thanks again, Bakhtiar. I appreciate it. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Education and Empowerment Podcast. This show is brought to you by Forstay, a SaaS-enabled online booking marketplace for student and intern housing. Forstay provides turnkey, all-in-one, cloud-based accommodation software solutions for colleges, universities, and organizations. Learn more at offcampus.forstay.com and landlords.forstay.com.